of the primordial frustrations. The point being that we are all interested in looking for some phenomenology, and of course we have she's a gay Catholic, it's a community, but I want to claim that there is a lot of phenomenology that is already there, that in context, but it's not only believed, it's really not understood. As you all know, in the last decade or so, we have seen a big success in cosmology, the confluence of two facts. First of all, we had theoretical predictions about what the power spectrum of the anisotropy of the cosmic microwave background should be, and on the other hand, we have seen precisely those expectations to arise in the observations in the last decade of experiments. And of course, this choice between the theoretical and observational results is considered a big success in cosmology. But there is something very unsettling about the story, at least in the way it's usually told. We start with a universe that, by some conditions arising before inflation, somehow enters this stage in which a large region of interest is perfectly homogeneous and perfectly isotropic in space-time, and has a quantum state, has a field that is scalar, that is in a quantum state. Populations are in a quantum state called vacuum state. Because you know the observation is not exactly clear when you mean by vacuum state. But all candidates for such a vacuum state have a property that they are all perfectly homogeneous and isotropic. And the issue is, how do we end up then in the state of the universe in which we have a prediction, a theoretical prediction of inhomogeneities and isotropies? How did this dramatic change occur? The first thing that comes to mind is whether we are concerned here with the standard quantum mechanical measurement problem. After all, we learn, even though we already perhaps not completely satisfying, we all have learned to deal with this measurement problem in quantum mechanics, and effectively we use it very well established procedure, and it gives us the results. So that led people to think that, well, this is a more philosophical issue than a physics issue. But in the normal situation, in the normal setting where we deal successfully with the problem, we have a clear understanding of when is the measurement occurring. We have a quantum mechanical system, we prepare it, and we perform a measurement. And then there is no question of when is the measurement is occurring. What is the measurement? And what is the physical advice of the measurement? And after you have these elements, then of course we have all sorts of ways to think about philosophically if you want, but very concrete way of dealing in practice with this situation. That is not what we have in cosmology. We don't know when that the measurement occurs, that will transform perfectly homogeneous isotropic setting of the beginning to something that doesn't have a symmetry. What matters is the measure, and what is the device that is responsible for that measure? There are many other related questions. I want to point out that what normally interprets what one sees directly is something called the Newtonian, a little bit obsessed of or use of language, the Newtonian potential. That's the one thing that the fluctuations in this Newtonian potential, that is the one thing that is observed in the universe, but in this vacuum state, the expectation value is going to be zero. On the other hand, of course, the expectation value of this quantum square is not zero, associated with the fluctuations, but that is not the one thing we see. This is the one thing we need to see. So, why do these predictions work so well? And that respects some deviations from the perfect expectation we are told we should have in the standard story, even in the absence of something that comes from a lukewarm gravity corrections or something of that sort. Let's consider the standard situation and just point out more clearly what is the issue about us. Well, consider for example a harmonic oscillator in its ground state. We know that has a wave function that tells us how to strain the position in that state, which we call delta. And we are used to say that, well, that state, the position has fluctuations of magnitude delta. But this is, should be understood as a fine following meaning. If we do measure this quantum position on an ensemble of identical systems, then the resulting values will have a statistical spread of delta. But what can we say about a single system? What if we measure a single system? How could this delta be, you know, recovered? What, and when I say that, have in mind that we have a single universe. What happens if we don't measure anything? Should we think that the X is somehow jumping around in time from one value to the other? We know that this is not the correct equation. What if we measure something like the energy, for example? That's not requiring to go into form into a system which will not have the same signature. Actually, if this is a long state and measure energy, I know perfectly what's going to come out. That value of energy and the state afterwards is going to remain the same state as we had before. Also, the most likely value of X, if I measure it, I'm talking about the zero experiment, perhaps I can talk about the most likely value of X. But the most likely value of X is zero, not delta. So when we transfer these questions to the problem at hand, the problem of the universe, then things are obviously unsettled. There have been people of course that have considered this issue, and most of them will tell us that this is resolved. But at the same time, there are at least four versions of this story indicating that the people that believe in one are not happy with the story that is being told by the other ones. The most famous, most well accepted view is this idea of standard incoherence. But for incoherence to work, we need to know how to separate the universe for a system, in system of interest and environment, and there is no clear way to do that in the case of the universe. Moreover, in general, we need to have something that will dictate us what is the preferred basis in which this incoherence or diagonalization of the density matrix will occur. And again, in the case which we have measuring device, the measuring device gives us that the basis, but in the absence of a measuring device, it's not clear what would be the source of that indication, what should be the preferred basis. But even more, if we even manage to surmount these two obstacles, the density matrix that is diagonal is still a far cry from a classical situation. That can be viewed obviously very simply by just changing the basis, and where we will recover all sorts of correlations. But even if we don't do that, what that situation is telling us is not that we have now an ensemble from which we can interpret each of the non-diagonal of the terms of the diagonal as measures of the probabilities of different outcomes, but it's still a very highly quantum mechanical system. Simply, there are no correlations between the states that are not on the diagonal. Sub-story, that story is also very often appealed to, is the idea of incoherence without incoherence, and that, I do not have time to go into all the details, but that also has some very serious problem. If you ask me at the end, I will tell you. Another story is the squeezed states, in which we, what we find out is that the system, the quantum mechanical system, goes into a state in which the product of the uncertainties is far in excess of what is the minimal uncertainty from quantum mechanics. And that is somehow interpreted by some people as indicating that now the system is classical because they can ignore the minimal uncertainty of which the quantum mechanics is required to have. But I say that this interpretation is very strange, because what that situation is a situation in which we have an even larger quantum mechanical aspect to the system. If I have a system in which, you know, I have a minimal weight packet, and I certainly say that it's some degree quantum mechanical, if I have a superposition of two wave packets in two different positions, that's even more quantum mechanical than the system that we started with, not this. There is an alternative simulation proposed by Wald and Walter, in which they invoke some birth, some moment of birth of the perturbations, and that moment of birth of the perturbations is not clear how to interpret that. What does it mean, perturbation meaning birth, being born? So the issue that we should address in reality to deal with this situation is whether, in some sense, there is a measurement occurring in the transition from the field characterized by a quantum state to the ensemble of realizations described as an elastic field. That is the way we normally understand quantum mechanics. But if so, what in our case is performing the measurement? Precisely what observables are being measured, and what the term is then, and also, of course, when is this measurement taking place, and do the answers to all these questions have any possible observational consequences? And as I indicated also before, what is the justification of the use of statistics in a single universe? In other words, why do our predictions work so well when, in some sense, we have only one system? So, the main point then is to raise these questions and to show that if we add to the standard story a little bit or a relatively simple supposition, then we can in fact answer those questions. And this supposition is going to be that somehow gravity is responsible for the collapse of the wave function in the spirit of what Penrose has been advocating for many years. So we will take this higher view and supplement it with the idea that there is physical collapse somehow induced by gravity, and that gravity is different. Gravity is not like other theories. In the standard picture, what one does is make a combination of the fluctuations of the scalar field and of the gravitational field, quantize them, and then proceed to obtain the so-called power spectrum of fluctuations. We will follow exactly the same approach, but, I mean, the same way if you want mathematical analysis of the perturbations, but we take a very different view. The view will be that there are fluctuations in the field that gravity somehow will produce this collapse. And then this collapse will backwrap on the gravity sector, producing the anisotropy in the Newtonian potential that is the constant that we see. So we start with the inflationary universe in which we have introduced the fluctuations of the metric degrees of freedom. This involves, of course, the choice of some engaged in this daily reading club. And we were chosen to engage. And then we considered the Einstein tensor equated to the energy momentum tensor at the different orders, at zero order when it doesn't over the inflationary scheme, and at first order we are going to recover the equations. If we have equations that are the standard ones, but we will, as I said, we will interpret them slightly different. So after using the first order, equating the zero order energy momentum tensor to the zero order Einstein tensor, we obtain Friedman Robertson Friedman equation for this universe, which dynamics is dominated by the inflaton field in the standard way. Looking at all diagonal curves of first order, we can see that these two intrinsically independent potentials need to be equal to the fact that there are first order non diagonal curves in the energy momentum tensor. And then, after some algebra, we obtain the equation that is going to be the basis of our analysis. Here we have what is the Newtonian potential. Equation controlling the Newtonian potential and two Einstein's equations of the first order, they are coupled with equations of the scalar field. And obviously, we have something like that for the standard equation for the scalar field, which is going to be also corrected by the equations in the method in which it's real. But here we will take the view that, from our point of view, we are going to have something occurring in the scalar field. That's something that the rest of the scalar field is going to produce through this equation, something on the Newtonian potential. And then this aspect is the backlash, this aspect here, which you have to see the suppression by the gravitational constant, is the back reaction of the scalar field to that, and then it's negligible compared to this part of the equation. So, we then concentrate on this part of the equation, which we have neglected, on the back reaction of the field to the fluctuation in the matter in the geometrical in this freedom. And I now proceed to quantize only the scalar field. So quantizing the scalar field is close in the standard. In the standard way, we have the scalar field in the pattern space-time. I can obtain the equations to motion. Go to the Fourier transform and obtain the equations to motion for the modes k, for the motion for moving wavelength k. Field and then write the field, the cluster field at this point as a superposition of this place is the most general solution. We can put everything inside a box of size L, like this very dynamic. And then we quantize it in this other way. So it is in conformal time. By the way, this field Y, this field Y is related to the fluctuations of the scalar field psi by the scale factor. So this is like to multiply this by the scale factor to obtain the depth of the scalar field. Okay, so now we promote this scalar field fluctuations to the quantum operator. Creation and annihilation operators. And similar, we can express the conjugate momentum for this field in this form. And now, choosing the vacuum, it's annihilated by this creation and annihilation operators corresponds to choosing making a choice for the specific solutions of these equations. Grande, por eso se me olvidó. We find that it's very simple equations for the modes of Starfield and the modes of the momentum function. Here, I want you to notice that there is this, well, here we have just something that is like a plane way, oscillating standard solution. But here we have this little correction, which as theta goes to zero, which is the time in which situation is going to end, this quantity grows very much. And it's an interesting point that we are speculating whether this thing will be thought as the aspect that will trigger the collapse of the wave function in the spirit of Fermat's idea that gravity somehow does not like to be force into a superposition in the world. Too wide of the superposition of its degrees of freedom. Okay, so now we are going to choose the modes which we are going to talk about this collapse. The modes are simply this normally called the most multiplied like the creation of the analysis operator and its complex conjugate, so this is one of the condition. And then in any state of the field, the information, the interesting information will be contained in the expectation values of this annihilation operator, the expectation value of the annihilation operator square, and this number operator. We are going to be concentrating for the moment in this situation, and then, of course, the relation between the expectation value or the expectation values of the infinite physical quantum, because the field and its conjugate momentum are there expressed in terms of the modes, this function that we described before, and this quantity, which is the expectation value of the annihilation operator. Also, the fluctuations of the field, that's the quantum uncertainties in the field, are given in terms now of these three quantities. And we can see very easily that in the vacuum situation, in which all these expectation values are zero, the fluctuations of the field are just given by this expression here, because of all these D, C, and E quantities are zero. The idea is that when this location becomes too large, somehow this collapse will occur. In the vacuum, we have that the fields, the vacuum value of the field is zero, and there are some fluctuations. But now, as I said, somehow this collapse occurs.
Are you associated with gravity?
Sorry?
Is there anything in the formalism that we need to
sort of... Yeah, I will go down to that, but, you know, how is gravity? The idea again is that gravity is responsible for forcing the skeleton to collapse. Once the skeleton collapses, it back reacts in gravity, producing fluctuations in the Newtonian potential, and that is the thing that we observe. No. I will not show you what about. But then try to convince you that something like this is necessary if you really want to understand what we see. Okay, so something forces the collapse, so I'm going to go to a new state theta, in which this collapse has occurred. And we must keep in mind that in our case we have one single universe. There is one state theta and not an ensemble. The way statistics will enter into our for analysis is going to be related to the fact that we do not measure several each specific value of this one for each k, but as I will show you, we measure a cumulative effect of all the different wavelengths through the thing that we see in the sky, the anisotropy that we see in the sky. So if the aggregate contribution of all the different k's in our single state that is going to be responsible for the success of prayer. It's a difficult application to our single state. So to proceed, I want to complete by trying to complete what is the most likely value of the one piece interest, and for that, we consider an imaginary ensemble of universes, each one named by letters of I, identified as a superintendent in the sample, and assuming those, there will be these numbers Q, I for each value of K, pertaining to the physical one in the collapse state for each one of these imaginary universes. Our universe, however, corresponds to a single element, let's call it I naught. And then for each k, you have this number k, q, k, I naught. And it's this collection for all the k's that will be the issue. But the point is that in each one of these ensembles, we will have a random sequence of numbers. And then for our u, for each value of k, we will have a random sequence of numbers. And when we choose particular universe which should have collapsed, we still have a random sequence of numbers, it's plus a random sequence of numbers associated with the QS. Okay, so the point is that in this collapse, we have this quantum field collapses, and in the new state, it has a value which we don't know. Its most likely value is zero. It's not delta. But we expect the values to fall in the different universes with a spread. It's a statistical spread that will have a magnitude equal to the fluctuations of uncertainties in the original state. So that is important to say that the value of the field in the collapse state is going to be equal to the square root of the uncertainty times some random number which is going to have most probable value zero and arbitrary random base.
How long do we need time? 10 minutes.
Okay, so now, having done that, I look at my gravitational sector equation, which says that the gravitational sector is going to have a source that is associated with the scalar and the fluctuations. And now I will say that what happens is gravity comes to the expectation value of this thing when the collapse has occurred. So after the collapse has occurred, gravity will come to this expectation value. And of course, for each one of the values of A, it's most likely the expectation value is zero. So now we need to recover this one. Well, so we might have been, this is just going from the equation to the K to the moles, recognizing the creating position. And you see two things. First of all, that is K squared in the denominator, and then this quantity M, which is the M, it looks like a mass, but it's basically the quantity that has been associated with the volume of the background scalar field. And it's small because it's very different. Constant here. So the likely value of the source of the gravitational freedom is then for each k given by this expression, where here in this fk we have a k the values of the phases. Random phases that are going to occur, and do these random values that are going to occur, most likely value of the set is zero. And here is the overall normalization that makes this situation not fully random. Now let's go to the observational quantities. The observational quantities, as I said before, what you see in the sky is this gravitational Newtonian, effective Newtonian potential measured at the time and radius of the cosmos. That is the thing we are taking a picture of
when we look at the microwave, the cosmic microwave.
But then we take this quantity and multiply it by a spherical harmonic, and this quantity, that is coefficient, is called what is going to be given to us in the volume form. But it gives us this, the average for all the values of m of this quantity squared, multiplied by a suitable L, L plus 1 factor, that is the, let me call it the observational quantity for L, and that's the one that is plotted in the graph that is shown to us in the standards in all the graphs in Singapore. So now we go back to the one of interest, which is the Newtonian potential, now expressed after the collapse in this. Form I said before, which is what the source is now. And, and the point is that what I'm going to mention is going to be the reality contribution of all the case to this quantity. Therefore, substituting this expression here, I arrive to this expression for the quantity of observation. So this is the quantity that we observe. Here are the parameters that were determined, the k dependences. Here there is in principle dependence on the radius of the subsurface of the coupling. And then there are some random cases that are hidden here. So this is the one that we observe. Now let's compute what is the most likely value. And the point is that this is now a random model made of steps, it's one of the steps. Could be zero, and besides that, could be the most likely value to step zero, but it has a spread, and these two steps can be in either dimensional or perhaps a two dimensional random walk. And now let's estimate what is the value, the most likely value of the magnitude of this value. And then with some standard statistics, we basically see that the cross terms in that, that appear in that square are going to drop. And then I have a well-defined expression in which the randomness not just has disappeared as it does in a random walk. We now change each variables and the input, particular input of our dependent spectrum, then is that. This quantity RD, the size of the surface that's scattered, disappears almost completely from the formula, except from this factor here, which I told you before, which is associated with the slow moving of the background scatter field. So if this quantity was negligible, then in fact we would recover the standard result in which in some sense, we lose more information about the surface that's scattering, and the result is this, which, as I said before, I don't have to multiply by L plus 1, making this one independent of L, which would be the result, the expected result of the flight, a result that would be there if it was not for another vector here, neglected here, I'm not interested, which are these acoustic properties. So, we recover using this method, if you want this observational quantity. If we can argue that this quantity is small, if it was not small, then information about the size of the surface of that scattering will be made into the observation. And then, of course, it's very easy to see, to study exactly what signature that would be. And that happened to the result. The result that I think now we understand very clearly is the magnitude of this spectrum. So the spectrum so far has two aspects, this flatness and the overall magnitude. Mm-hmm. And the overall magnitude in this scheme turns out to be basically dominated by this global parameter multiplied by the size of the potential that you need to mass plants to the pole. This quantum is normally inflated to scale with something that was mass plant, normally going to be something over one. And in our case, the total overall magnitude of this population would be small because here we have the slow growth parameter appearing as small. And this is a difference. There's a big difference in this result with the results obtained in the standard case, which has the following expression, some numbers, and then the slow growth parameter appearing in the denominator multiplied by this one. So in the standard case, if you want to say that the potential is associated with the mass plant square, you have to do something very particular to ensure that this is a small number as many your fluctuations to be. This is something that goes some sort of spiraling of this one, which in principle has to be smaller than one to have slow hold, but then in the standard you cannot be much smaller than one, because if that was the case, then your population would be substantially larger than what is obtained. In our analysis, the situation is reversed. Now the small parameters is in the denominator. So there are several issues that can be studied once we have this point of view. Concrete issues, phenomenological issues. For example, as I said, each one of these quantities comes from a real random walk, and the accuracy which you can describe, or which you can predict the result of a random walk depends on the number of steps that this random walk takes. So if you could measure some way scattered in this random walk, we could get some input about the number of steps or the values of k that are contributing to your result. And in fact, that could be done if we, instead of looking at the average value of the ALN over all values of n, because we have records that not only depend on n, we look at ALN specifically, and for a given value of L, we look at how it's going to fluctuate for values of n. That fluctuation will contain information of how many k's are contributing to your overall result. This approach solves some degree or solves the issue of the smallest of the fluctuations. But the main point that I want to stress is that there is a serious flaw in the story we are normally told about the origin of these fluctuations. There is a nakedness in the story, and instead of ignoring that and declare it solved, we should be examining very carefully, because looking at that may result in very interesting things indeed. For example, what exactly is the mechanism of collapse? What can you say about the mechanism of collapse? In the analysis I have just shown you, since the first of the analysis that we did on this subject, we require the collapse to occur very, very early on after the onset of inflation. And it's not clear exactly what changes will occur by allowing this collapse to happen much later on. So this looking at the results would tell us, would contain information about what is producing this collapse. As I said, the effective size of the universe of the values, for instance, the values of k's, how many k's are contributing to the sum, is contained, could be contained in the fluctuations of the quantities that we in principle, or in the other view, expect somehow to be currently not determined. There could be information about the details of inflation and the initial state and other things besides what now has become involved, like looking at good quantum gravity effects of that sort. And to finalize, just a question mark or remark that I have to make in my mind, whenever I hear about transplanting a problem, the idea that this
He said the question that we see somehow we have a length that is shorter than the plant length at the time of inflation. Well, whenever we talk about that, we have to talk to some frame. Are we thinking that the plant length is some frame, or that it is waste should be bound by the plant length in some particular frame? Is that the frame of the bottom microwave platform? Well, from the other analysis that I didn't talk about today, it seems that that view is not consistent with what we know about physics today. So why do we assume that there is something like that? Okay, so that is basically the things I wanted to tell you. And let me leave you with a picture, because they say the picture says more than 1,000 words.
You say gravitational force. I say archangel gravitational force. Feynman says that plant wave function is number one. Seems to be everything that's important in your work comes at F class. So it really is quite independent of any sort of next
life. You are absolutely right. No, that's not true. It's true that it could be Mambo Jumbo, the Dark Angel, or the Pink Elephant that caused the collapse. What is not true is that no collapse is needed. If you have no collapse, then you cannot really understand what you're seeing. If there is no collapse, the unique physical mechanism by which physics allows us to go from a situation that is perfectly symmetric, initial state perfectly symmetric, dynamics perfectly symmetric, to an outcome that is not perfectly symmetric, is the collapse of the wave function. There is no other mechanism known to us that they are possible, that the frame is possible. Unitary evolution will preserve the perfect homogeneity and entropy of space-time that started.
Yes, the evolution will essentially the wave function in the universe.
If that's the case, if you don't start with the assumption, then why are you saying that the vacuum state is a field is what produces things? Even if it's not from the universe, even if it's just a stellar field, you have a perfectly homogeneous stellar field, which is in the vacuum state, which is perfectly. But there is no classical aspect of that. If you have classical dynamics, or even quantum dynamics, unitary or classical evolution, and you start in a perfectly homogeneous and isotropic state, and your equations don't break that, then you are going to end in a perfectly homogeneous and isotropic state. No way around that. The only thing that we know in physics that does that is the collapse.
Yes, you said that gravity somehow causes the collapse. But gravity is always there, so there should exist a series of collapses.
That's true. That's an excellent question. Okay. Why was it gravity caused the collapse instead of Mambo Jumbo or the Dark Angel or whoever caused the collapse? Because gravity we know is there and the Dark Angel we haven't seen. So, you know, it seems that we have like quantum mechanics to all other things. Whereas, well, gravity appears to be a little bit more resistant to that, and perhaps there's hope. And these are not my words, it's, you know, very much what we have again, this idea, and that's only way that's been in the direction. That gravity may be responsible for something different. But you're right, one important aspect that we should study when we look in more detail exactly what our model is telling us about the collapse, where the collapse occurs, and if you want to describe the gravity and the particles, then you should look at what are the fluctuating quantities that are affecting gravity, and then say, well, gravity appears to react at this point, and then
then we will have an explanation of what we will be considering and what we see. But then, against it, what you just said, we have to make sure that during the rest of the inflation, that situation doesn't occur again and produces more collapse or far more, which is study well. If it happens again and produces far more collapse, what are the observational consequences of this collapse and can we see it then and distinguish it from what?
Yeah, that's my point.
I don't have to cross other questions. There are other questions. I think that's just thanks.